Hello and welcome to the Monocle Culture Show with me, Robert Bound. Now, Christmas is upon us, or at least that's what retailers across the land would like us to believe. The last few weeks we've been inundated with festive adverts, and the competition for the best one seems to be getting fiercer. Snowy scenes, glossy turkeys, grinning children, crackling fireplaces, and of course those tear-jerking, tender moments of kindness, or are they mawkishness, are being flashed across our screens like there's no tomorrow in order to sell department stores, supermarket chains, beauty products, and maybe the very notion of Christmas itself. Budgets are getting bigger, runtimes are getting longer, and the anticipation of them is getting stronger. But why are we so obsessed with Christmas ads? And is this a quintessentially British thing? On the show today, I'll be joined by Scott Bryan, TV editor at BuzzFeed, and Toby Earle, TV editor for the London Evening Standard. Toby and Scott, welcome both.
Thank you.
And we've got a lot to get through on today's programme. Hopefully it is a rich seam, possibly even something that fits in under the culture umbrella. Who knows? We can do that. Toby's making a face. I'm going to bring you in first. As I say, there is so much stuff. We're inundated with TV ads, with all sorts of stuff. Everything has a snowflake in the corner of it and has a jingle bell attached to it. How are you feeling about Christmas ads right now, Toby?
Well, for a country which extols the virtue of the stiff upper lip, it now finds its heartstrings have become biologically attached to its purse strings. It is impossible for there to be a Christmas advert without in some way trying to play out a minor drama within the 90 seconds or however long they wish to sort of film the advert for. Everything has to be a melancholy, minor drama. It's meant to invoke a sense of family, a sense of belonging, and a sense of the true meaning of Christmas, which is buying stuff from us because we've made you feel so mawkish and melancholy.
Okay, so that's a strong start from Toby.
Oh, it is. It is. I mean, the thing that really sort of always confuses me every single year is that it starts in late October, early November. And I guess because consumer spending is, you know, not as strong as it might have been because people are a little bit insecure about the future. But then it goes right up to, you know, 9 p.m. on Christmas Eve of like, buy stuff, buy stuff, buy stuff, family, 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 Christmas, Christmas, belonging, belonging.
Yeah.
And then it's like, go out Boxing Day, buy sofa, go out, like get healthy, get another out of the house as far as possible. And it's like, so conflicting.
It's an interesting thing. You're right. The message is literally from midnight on Christmas Day, suddenly going to Boxing Day, and it's like, this is now cheap, buy it. Buy it immediately. And it's got no bells and whistles, no reindeer and no snow on it. Right?
No. It's all now midsummer, and everyone's having a lovely time, and they're completely healthy just whilst for the last month you've been told to stuff your face.
You cannot possibly be telling us that this is all based on some sort of fakery and ridiculousness.
I mean,
should we tackle the elephant in the room? It's been the Christmas elephant in the room for the last 5-7 years, the John Lewis Christmas ad. This year it stars, from sort of beginning to end and back again, Elton John. What do we think, Scott?
So the weird thing is I was invited to a preview of the advert, but 2 days before it was on, in a John Lewis. So I had to go up to the front desk and say a code word to get taken up to the third floor. And then what they had done is they moved some of the set from the advert, because it goes through different periods of Elton John's life. And they actually set it up in the store, but they tried to disguise it at the time. Not even employees knew that they were doing it, because they didn't know what the advert was. So they made it seem that it was this kind of like closed for refurbishment area just by the kitchenware department. So then went in, was given some headphones, and it was like five execs from John Lewis who immediately were like, what do you think? Like 10 seconds after I had seen it. So it was a bit weird in terms of being in that environment and then seeing the actual advert in terms of knowing exactly what it was for. I think it was kind of...
Yeah.
The way that I sort of feel was that people can be quite cynical about that John Lewis advert, because it's sort of saying, well, is it really selling John Lewis or is it really selling Elton John? Because he's got his sort of biopic like coming out next year. There's the
big tour
coming up next year. And immediately a lot of people were assuming that it was going to be used for him more than it was actually selling John Lewis. But did it make me feel quite emotional? Yes, it did.
So, because it's a great song. He's a great star. There is obviously that collating of National Treasure status with Elton John and with John Lewis.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And it kind of worked for me, that one. But it's a strange thing to kind of go into, you know, when you have to, sometimes you go to, I don't know, listen to an album playback, or you go to a press screening of a film, people don't ask you immediately, what did you think?
Yeah.
You know, you're allowed to kind of go back to the office or go home and kind of collect your thoughts for a couple of days afterwards. It's kind of hard sell.
It's a little bit
hard sell from a soft selling ad, I suppose, in some ways. Toby.
Yeah. I mean, also as well, what are you going to say? I'm going to recommend this to my friends and family. Yeah. This is the greatest advert I've ever seen.
I prefer Rod Stewart.
I mean, it's a bizarre situation to be put in, to be immediately asked your feeling about something which is going to be seen by millions of people and is entirely ephemeral.
Yeah.
By the way, I think beautifully made adverts, I think adverts with wit and humour and depth can be made, and they do stick with you, of course they do. But something like this, which is... Every year they go to top the last one, to top the last one, to top the last one. So in essentially, in a year's time, people will have kind of forgotten about this one already. Mm.
Finally on the Elton John, John Lewis sort of tie-up, Elton John Lewis, he'll forever be known. Does it work for you as one of these new Christmas commercials, which don't need to necessarily mention the idea of Christmas? One of the ideas of that song is the idea of the gift. This is my gift is my song, and this one's for you. It's kind of notional. It kind of implants the idea, but it's not specific, and it's not Christian. So it's not all the things that Christmas ads previously have had to have been. Is this kind of typical of the way that Christmas ads have been going, the themes and the kind of production values?
I think what some retailers are looking for now is to impart the notion of how one gift can change someone's life in ways which cannot be imagined at that point of exchange. Particularly in this advert, of course, the child has a piano, and then before you know it, there he is in front of thousands of people playing. It's one of the greatest rock and roll stars the world's ever seen. That idea that one thing can actually alter someone's life, and it meaning something as opposed to just maybe splurging on heaps of plastic, that's a message that they want people to take away from. And I think it's less unseemly than saying, buy all this stuff, and here's this, and then here's this, and buy that. It's sort of selling a notion of changing someone's life is far more acceptable, perhaps these days, in the era of austerity, that rather than just going out splashing the cash.
Yeah, I guess it's got all those. It ticks all those boxes. So John Lewis has become, as we said, it's the kind of elephant in the room. It's the daddy in terms of British Christmas advertising, and of course, it's kind of spawned this legion of piss takers of kind of, you know, and it's become actually the John Lewis Christmas ad baiting has become kind of like a sort of a serious sport. Even within the John Lewis partnership, Waitrose have done an advert which takes the mickey out of the John Lewis advert. So the premise is that a family are gathering around to watch the John Lewis advert, and the parents kind of speed it up so they can eat a Stollen, is the cake that they decide to eat at the end. But what does this tell us about the way that people's appetite, or playing with people's expectation, the John Lewis ad is such a brand in itself, let alone John Lewis as a company, but the advert is such a brand that you can mess around with it like this. And maybe we can also talk about this, the real John Lewis, who lives somewhere in the United States, who's got the John Lewis Twitter handle.
I mean, the way that I see it is that we're living in an age now where possibly having an advert being talked about is the greatest sort of thing that the advertisers want. And even if it is sort of completely pulled apart and hated, they're like, hooray, we're being noticed. Because particularly with young consumers who are all watching stuff on Netflix or maybe on stuff on demand, they're not going to have that interest in terms of watching the actual adverts when they're on during the evening. So it's a matter of trying to be distinctive with what you're trying to sell. So, for example, there's an Amazon advert that ends up, I think people have now been putting the music of The Shining over it. And that's got like, because it is really creepy, like boxes in various rooms singing merrily along in the corner and lights start going out. So, you know, the fact is that, you know, there might be people who aren't fans of Amazon, but Amazon are probably like, hooray! Yeah. Like, that's now got such a wide reach. And I actually saw the parody first before I actually saw the Can You Feel It advert on that afternoon. And it's like, that's how it always works. And it's sort of the case that with the whole, there's a guy called John Lewis who's not the shop on Twitter, you know, that he's been basically providing...
He's some dude in Illinois.
Yeah, some dude in Illinois that whenever, you know, lots of people are complaining about the state of their refrigerators or whatever, they at John Lewis rather than the actual company, which is like JL Lewis, whatever, like not the same. And of course, he like politely points them in the same direction. So of course, then Twitter then uses them. That then creates a lot of social media interaction, and then that helps John Lewis indirectly. So it's a weird machine.
It is a weird machine. Each of these things, as you say, if an Amazon ad can be spoofed, and you can see the spoof before the real thing, people are overlaying, sort of trying to turn this thing into a Kubrick film.
Yeah. Well, but there was one that the other year that really made me laugh, which was a Paddington advert. I can't remember what it was advertising, but loads and loads of people on social media said, thought that he was not saying thank you, little bear, that it was something else. And the moment that I watched that, it completely changed my perception. But genuinely, that ended up being one of the only adverts I remembered of that entire year.
Was that M&S?
It was M&S, yeah.
The thing about John Lewis as well, of course, is then Twitter have ended up doing an advert, a Christmas advert with him this year.
Yeah.
Because of the extraordinary patience that man exercises when dealing, like Scotty says, with people saying, well, my fridge is broken, what are you going to do about it? And like a guy thousands of miles away says, well, right now I can't really help, but you might want to go and speak to these people instead and points to them, like you said, in the right direction. So Twitter have then sort of used him as an example of the goodwill, the good feeling which can come about Christmas, and the kindness that can be exhibited at this time of year, which maybe should be exhibited the rest of the year as well, not just in the 4 weeks at the back end of a year.
Yeah, the real John Lewis is some sort of messianic religious figure. It's actually quite apt. He's the only one that actually is bearing out the spirit of Christmas, dutifully replying to tweets. He's basically Santa.
I mean, he really, in terms of politeness, yes, because I think even in the advert, it even mocks, talking about the parody, it even mocks the slow, mournful cover versions that we have in these. You can take the most upbeat song. You could take Andrew WK, Party Hard, and they would have someone going, party, party hard. And it even has that kind of slowed down version. And he asks that person who's actually in the room to please leave. He's trying to just do some work here. It's a great sort of conflation of all the tropes and the kind of sometimes laughable elements that you see in these adverts.
Another one that's sort of been a big deal this year has been the Iceland ad, which was not sort of TV worthy. It was considered too proselytizing to be fit for human consumption on the television. But this is an interesting one. People probably know the story of this, but we'll fill our international listeners in on this. It's essentially kind of like it's a pain to the problems of palm oil. It's a strange one. Well, Scott, we're very much in your realm of, at BuzzFeed, being TV and being online with this.
Yes.
So maybe you can talk us through this.
I mean, it's sort of the case that it's sort of read by Emma Thompson, and it sort of tells a story about a sort of bear that ends up staying. Is it a bear?
Or it's an orangutan.
It's an orangutan that ends up
staying.
All these Christmas animals.
Merging
into one.
Those famous Christmas animals, reindeer, orangutan.
But an orangutan that sort of stays around in a young girl's bedroom. And the idea is like, why is the orangutan there? And it's the idea that it's rainforest is being completely under destruction by the production of palm oil. And it's sort of got like it's essentially nothing really to do with Iceland, but the fact that Iceland said that they're cutting back on palm oil production or cutting it out entirely. And the fact that they've sort of been affiliated with Greenpeace, who are seen to be a political sort of pressure group, that then sort of created this weirdness where you're not allowed to have political advertising on TV. And, you know, there's good things and bad things about it, but probably good thing is that it stops having the US style of campaign advertising during your advert breaks. So, but of course, there are some other things that when you're having an advert that is primarily doing a good-natured thing, that could also fall in those sort of same rules. So that's why it wasn't on TV, because it sort of fell foul in the rules. But then, of course, it created such a big social media impact by people saying, you know, there's this advert, it can't be shown, and you can watch it online, that I think it's now, whether they planned this from the start or not, I don't know, created much more of a bigger impact than probably it was if it was shown on TV in the first place.
And you'd have thought also the agency that they employed and all the rest of it, there was a point at which they must have known that it wasn't going to pass muster for the Advertising Standards Authority, but thought we can go with this. And it must be the first time that this has happened, when people have decided to sidestep television itself in order to get their Christmas message across.
Well, yeah, I think, and it was placed online and all of a sudden people are saying, here's the advert you can't see on television. Yeah. This is the advert they don't want you to see. And of course, the nature of something being taboo automatically draws people in. And so people race to actually watch it and understand what the message is. And in fact, once it was banned and was deemed too politically sensitive for television, there was an al fresco sort of a stunt pulled where you had this creative agency having an orangutan walking around a park and lots of photos of that being taken. And all of a sudden, sort of placing an orangutan in the middle of London and sort of drawing attention to the topic, to the theme, and of course to the advert itself as well. So it gave them an opportunity to expand the message even further. Like Scotty was saying, probably further than they could have had in the first place had it just gone straight to broadcast. Again, it's not like we were saying earlier about a message as such. It's the idea that the company is an ethical, moral business and it wishes to take greater corporate responsibility for the welfare of the environment. So I don't know whether or not that means people are going to say, get my pigs in blankets from Iceland. But they seem to be a company which people might want to ally themselves with.
This idea of conscience, the sort of social conscience, the environmental conscience of a brand, of a company, that's sort of, it is and isn't tied in with this kind of the sentimentality and the kind of some of the messages, not necessarily of Christmas, but certainly of the Christmas ads, right? There is sort of, we are kind of heading that way. I kind of feel like next year we'll see more of these kind of ads, that they won't fall foul of advertising standards, but they will be kind of subtly or unsubtly kind of giving some sort of message somehow. I kind of feel the dam has been broken on this.
Yeah, it's like a matter about being distinctive. Because I think in this sort of age, like all the conventions, I think have been done so over and over and over and over again. Or families together, Christmas, da da da. That, like you said, they all blend into each other, but they also become incredibly forgetful. But like, that was really interesting in terms of like when I was, you know, invited to come on and talk about this. I ended up trying to think of all of the adverts from the last few years that have really resonated with me. And I found it really quite interesting how so few I remember.
So give us a couple of examples, because I was going to ask you both if there are ones from when you were a kid that you remember, or whether there's sort of certain standout ones. My mind is a blank. I looked at YouTube a bit of a mega mix of 1980s adverts. As I said, when we came in and before we switched the microphones on, everything had to rhyme and everything sounded like a Chaz and Dave pub sing-along song. And it was really, I mean, they were much worse than the ones we have now. Like zero production budget, an awful kind of, you know, rhyming in it. But Scott, what stood out then?
I had to really dig deep. But like there's been some...
Emotionally, he means, Toby.
And a lot of them is probably are all by brands that no longer exist. Are all fading away. So there's the Toys R Us advert. Yeah. And that just reminds me, because it was a case of, you know, being very Christmassy, where it will be that 10-second animation at the very start, and then it's then 30 seconds of buy Scale Electrics, buy this, buy that, buy that, but buy, you know, like, but it was the theme tune that reminds me, and I think it's the nostalgic fact that it came back every single year. And it's the same with like the Coca-Cola advert, holidays are coming, it's back every single year. It's like a pattern, so it gets drilled into your nostalgic part of your head, as reminding you about youth and being back with your family and so forth. So those are there. And then the other one is like the Yellow Pages advert of like the boy with a mistletoe and he's too short, so he steps on a massive yellow pages of like pre-internet. Now it's like razor thin, no difference in height whatsoever, and they kiss. But genuinely apart from that, and you know, John Lewis's nothing's really
resonated.
No, it's strange.
I guess there was a preponderance of ads that used to show, there were pack shots of turkeys and Brussels sprouts and roast potatoes and things, and families in Christmas jumpers with kind of paper hats on sitting around tables. That seems to be very passé now. Mm. So I think Lidl's Christmas ad this year is that. Tesco's is kind of that, although it's people agreeing and disagreeing about the best way to do this, that, and the other. So there's that kind of funny family competition, we do it this way, you do it that way, but we all do it right because everyone's together kind of thing, which is Tesco's one. Yeah. Quite a nice ad. The Lidl one has got that the awful moment where there's real people in it, an actual supermarket, and food, not that nice food. it seems a bit strange when you kind of come off the back of even the Sainsbury's one, which is quite jolly, which is kind of like a big school play. Well, that seems like a sort of stressfully brilliant drama school kind of for children.
What it was, I think what's really interesting is that in 2012, I think it was, Asda did an advert where they basically had the slogan was, behind every family Christmas, there's a mother, like putting it together. And that caused an immediate backlash because it was like, well, no, because, you know, that's a stereotype that you're sort of pinning it is actually many different people. We've moved on as a society. And I think...
Father Christmas's nose was really put out of joint for one.
Well, yeah, but I think it was kind of the case that, you know, every family's different. And I think what is really quite interesting about the Tesco one, and they've been doing it throughout the year, this is like a pattern with a Christmas theme, is that they've been showing families that, you know, might be single parents or a gay couple or people who are just at home in their 20s with their friends. And I think it starts to show that actually we are in very the same in terms of our own traditions, but we're also very different as a society. And it's great that advertising is starting to reflect that rather than trying to give this wholesome, traditional, middle-class, white family sort of mentality for years. You know, it's not reflective of who we are as a society.
Yeah, that's that seems very old-fashioned now, actually, that sort of stuff. And occasionally people dip into it. That sort of kind of 2.4 children kind of nuclear family thing is almost used as an irony. You almost, when that is used as in a Christmas ad these days, that is sort of swept away like a tablecloth, leaving some of the glasses remaining, but some of them not. Mm. You know what I mean? That is kind of used as a trope with which we're familiar to kind of to mess around with almost. It's a real funny one.
But the scale of these and the production values of these adverts are an arms race. It's ever increasing. You sort of talk about adverts you don't even remember from last year. Michel Gondry directed the John Lewis advert last year.
Yeah.
Right. That's crazy. Currently directing the person who directed the Sainsbury's advert this year with that sort of school production. That's Michael Greasy, who directed The Greatest Showman. I mean,
really?
This is absolutely, in a way, nonsense. Yeah. In the fact that you are hiring in huge Hollywood directors in order to put on these productions, make them look amateurish, even in order to make them look even more charming. But that's the, you know. But I think what you were saying earlier, you know, you have a sense of, where do we keep going? Where can we keep going? We have the school productions, we have the families, we have the parents, we have these traditional format points, which are so exhausted, we are veering ever deeper into self-parody the whole time. Something has to give. And I think the greatest Christmas advert for me, which is so funny and brilliant, is the Iron Brew advert, which spoofs the snowman. So you had the little boy who makes a snowman, the snowman comes to life, he takes him up and he's flying, and they're flying across Scotland, and the little boy gets thirsty, cracks a can of Iron Brew, and the snowman wants some, he says no. And of course it's all being sung in a Alan Jones falsetto, and then of course the snowman nicks the boy's Iron Brew and drops him, and the boy says I'm falling very far, and he just falls through the air into a massive snowdrift while the snowman flies on. They've just released a sequel to that this year, Iron Brew. They've released a single where the boy is out for revenge. He climbs out the snowdrift and hunts the snowman down, steals a plane to win his Iron Brew back, and there is a twist at the end. Again, Iron Brew has nothing to do with Christmas. No. Right? You would drink it after Hogmanay for sure, and after a big night out, without doubt. But they are using something that is very dear to people, flipping it on its head and making it funny. And I think that at the moment, that is the one way perhaps to kind of get into people's heads. It's classic. Just make it funny.
Yeah. And as Scott was saying, memorability is everything. It doesn't matter if people are spoofing your brand or spoofing your message. Okay, so Monocle is nothing if not an international office. Mm. So we took a microphone roving around the office earlier today to see what some of the people behind some of the desks thought of Christmas advertising and what it was like in their country.
Hi, my name is Carlota Rabello. I'm a producer at Monocle 24. Portugal has a weird tradition of Christmas adverts. There's this particular one that everyone awaits every Christmas, and it's of this giant hippo called Popota. It's a pink giant hippo, and she's like the mascot of this big supermarket. And every Christmas, there's a big advert where she's dancing to a popular pop song of that year, where you would change the lyrics into something related to Christmas. She's not singing any Christmas songs. She's probably dancing to Sean Paul with the changed lyrics or to Jennifer Lopez. It is quite funny because if you're a kid, you love it, it's colourful, you can dance to it, you know, and she has all the gifts, etc. But if you're older, you then will go to a nightclub and that song from the Popota advert will be playing during Christmas in the nightclub too. So I guess it's for all ages.
Hello, I'm Chiara Ramella. I'm the culture editor here at Monocle and an Italian by birth. In Italy, I think traditionally it's the sweet making companies that rule the roost, at least. Specifically, a Pandoro making company called Bauli. Pandoro, obviously, for those of you who don't know, it's a version of panettone without horrid raisins and candied fruit. Every year they bring out an advert that's horrendously cheesy, but perhaps most interestingly, it always features exactly the same jingle. And because Italy doesn't really have a tradition of Christmas songs per se, the Bauli song has basically become the most popular Christmas song, like by extension. It goes something like this. A Natale vuoi fare quello che non sai fare mai. It's terrible, really. I wish that we could have Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas all the time, but alas, we're stuck with a Pandora song. So there you have it.
Hi, my name's Daphne. I'm a researcher on Monocle 24 Radio. So the first thing to note is that in Greece, we haven't really traditionally celebrated Christmas in December. So the actual exchange of presents and the more festive season is in the new year. So the new year is when we typically exchange presents. But I think that's why Christmas ads are, I guess, less of a big deal in Greece. So I'd say that the majority is skewed towards children. But for us, it's mainly Easter adverts that are a big deal.
I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco, producer here at Monocle 24, and I am from Brazil. And I have to say, I mean, even though we don't have as many Christmas songs and commercial ads as here in the UK or in the US, for example, I think, you know, Brazil is still a massively Catholic country and we take Christmas very seriously. I don't think we reach that emotional level when it comes to Christmas ads. And to be honest, it's very close to Carnival. So if you look at the charts, you wouldn't see All I Want for Christmas Is You, but you would see like something more like Shake Your Booty.
That was an interesting tour around the
really
office.
Interesting.
Wasn't it really good?
Like how in Greece is not a it's just not a thing.
I guess
like,
the Orthodox Church is a different one. They have everything.
Same
that
as
much.
Spain, I think. Yeah. They open their presents on Epiphany. So.
Yeah. So it's a slightly
but
different.
It's one
thing.
Of those things that, of course, is so obvious. But I just never thought. I just thought there was no escape wherever you were. No escape.
The like, stranglehold, Scott. You might have to go to Greece for Christmas if you want to dodge some of this stuff.
I mean, looking at my finances on the run up to Christmas, no.
Well, maybe Brazil is an interesting. Interesting one, because I love the fact that, it, as Fernando was saying, one of our producers here on Monocle 24, because Christmas is so close to Carnival, the Christmas charts are still Shake Your Booty rather than Jingle Bells or whatever.
I mean, again, what a crossover potential there is there between Father Christmas and booty
potential.
Shaking.
I mean, it's an interesting one. So it seems our European pals, at least, Christmas is less of a commercial thing. There is less of this kind of onus on the big budget. Kind of commercial thing that it's actually, as Chiara was saying, our culture editor who's an Italian, it's sort of more based around kids. Actually, it's candy stores, it's candy companies and doing it rather than, you know, the big department stores and stuff. Yeah, it's a strange one.
The weirdest thing I found is I went to Australia about 10 years ago in July, and they put all of their Christmas TV shows on in July because, of course, on Christmas Day, everyone is out because it's like 40 degrees Celsius. So they end up putting them in big sort of Christmas TV marathons in the middle of the summer. But then even weirder, they then put advertising around them that it's also Christmas themed. And it's this is so weird.
That's so, really strange. Really, it's like midsummer Christmas.
Yeah,
that's bizarre, isn't it? It's deeply strange. I wonder, before we go, you mentioned, Toby, the way out of this might be to sort of break the cycle, citing the Iron Brew ad in Scotland. The way to do it is to kind of take the mickey out of it. How left field can you go with Christmas? Because you can't break the idea of what people think of it.
I mean, last year there was an advert which was so bizarre that it caused something of an uproar. This was the Poundland advert, which featured a naughty elf with a tea bag standing astride a Barbie. Now, the phrase teabagging.
I think people could Google it, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could Google that if they so wish. But Poundland had an advert which had a naughty elf with a teabag over Barbie's face. Now, that did cause a bit of an outcry. But you're laughing, Rob, because it is funny and it is ridiculous and it's stupid.
Was this on the TV?
It was a print ad. In fact, I think it was out on their social media feed. That is pretty left field. It was just to cut through all the noise around it. If you can't afford to spend millions on an ad campaign, you can't afford to hire a Hollywood director, can't afford to hire some very talented theatre school children to pretend to be not very good on stage. Do something pretty wacky.
Maybe we go full circle. It just goes back to these kind of 30-second ad with, albeit the terrain of family, the terrain of Christmas has slightly changed, but this idea of togetherness that is not mawkish, it's just quite well done and nice.
We can't forget how much these shops and these brands rely on Christmas as a time for revenue. And there have been profit warnings left, right and centre for major brands. So absolutely. I think what they are trying to do is engender a sense of identity that people want to be a part of. Hence John Lewis renaming itself John Lewis and Partners, in order to get that sense of we're a family, we're a group. It's not just a faceless corporation.
Indeed, it's not, as we've seen and heard for the last half an hour. Toby Earle and Scott Bryan, thank you both very much. Really, it's some interesting topics. We bored down deep into the notion of Christmas advertising. Thank you both. And thanks also, of course, to my producer, Holly Fisher. Thanks, too, to Paige Reynolds and Bill Lutie for their help supplying us with the Vox Pops. We'll be back at the same time next week. For the time being, from me, Robert Bound, thanks very much for tuning in.